This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In the beginning, there was Pong. 30 years later, video games have spread beyond the arcades and basement lairs of teenage boys, way beyond. 50% of Americans now play video games, according to the Entertainment Software Association, and the average player age, they claim, is 30. Microsoft's Xbox 360 is making a huge noise this year, the leading edge of a new generation of hyper-sophisticated game technology. The jungle scenes in King Kong the Game put you right in the jungle. Call of Duty 2 has combat scenes right out of Spielberg. Games, we're told, are the new theater. Up next on Point, roll over Shakespeare and Hollywood. Video games take the stage. Joining me now from San Diego, California, is Raf Koster, Chief Creative Officer for Sony Online Entertainment. He was the lead designer of Ultima Online and the creative director of Star Wars Galaxies. He's been called a visionary in the video game world. Raf Koster, thank you for joining us.
Hello, Tom.
Raf, you're out there doing it. People are making comparisons between the greats of cinema directing and the new sort of creative officers like yourself in the video game world. Is that where you belong? Is this the new theater? Is this the new stage?
You know, I think we actually are still very early on in the development of games, and I don't think we've quite had our DeMille yet, to be honest. I think that there's quite a lot for us to learn to be able to get to even that level of craftsmanship.
I mean, we see chases and shoot-em-ups and first-person, you know, the guns way out front. Do you see on the other side of these that have been the first and second and maybe third now generation kind of dominant themes in games, do you see real drama, real theater that we would recognize in the tradition of theater emerging in the interactive realm, or is that just not what it's about?
Well, to a large degree, that's not what it's about. Games are primarily models. They're systems, right? They aren't really, at their core, a storytelling medium. What we've done in games is marry traditional storytelling, mostly taken straight out of film, actually, and married it with gameplay. I think that what we are seeing is games pursuing two separate paths right now. One is that kind of blockbuster entertainment mode where they present these stories, and we are starting to see better and better stories being presented. And the other is games as toys, where we see titles like Nintendogs, The Sims,
right,
SimCity, of course, where the models are exposed to players, and instead of following a story, they build their own.
Raf Koster, what's turning your head in this season's crop of games? Where do you see the frontier, the new horizon?
Well, actually, more than in games with even better graphics than last year, I'm actually very interested in the very quiet revolution that's going on with new control schemes. Probably my favorite game of the year right now is a game called Guitar Hero.
And why, and what do you mean by control schemes?
Well, on a console, you typically play using a standardized console controller. And on a computer, you typically play using the mouse and keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
But video gaming has a long tradition of developing custom controllers to enable particular kinds of games. Probably one of the best-known examples would be Dance Dance Revolution, which is played using a dance mat that is placed on the floor. And it's a pretty good form of exercise.
And where you step determines the tune you get.
Actually,
or you respond.
You have to follow dance
the tune.
Steps
yes.
that are scrolling by on the screen.
That's
and
right.
do them in rhythm.
That's right. I've seen that. That makes Twister look like a Neanderthal game.
That's right. And actually, Dance Dance Revolution has actually been installed in high schools across the country as an alternative to traditional PE classes, because it's something very compelling for students.
But that seems a long, long way from drama. As you say, that's almost a hand-eye or a foot-eye coordination act and an aerobic exercise. Raf, let me ask you, I was just reading in the New York Times this week about Steven Spielberg saying that cinema ought to be the model for gaming to follow. He told students studying gaming at the University of Southern California they should improve their storytelling, their character development, the emotional content in the same way that it's been that they have enhanced action and images. He said the medium will have come of age when someone confesses that they cried at level 17.
So there it is again, Raph, the idea that this may be the new stage for drama, for tears, and all the rest. You seem ambivalent about that.
Well, clearly Spielberg is a master storyteller, and I suspect that he's probably coming at games from that particular angle. I do know that he's a gamer himself. But to me, the real strength of games lies in their core, which is the fact that they are models, and not in the stories. Frankly, most of the stories in video games are, to start with, Spielberg's right, they're mediocre. And secondly, they're peripheral to the central action of the game. Typically, what happens is a fairly cinematic experience is built that is interrupted by short sequences of gameplay.
Raph Koster, you're famous for the massively multiplayer online role-playing games you've been involved with, Star Wars Galaxies most of all. What about the community, the shared aspect of video games? First of all, how do you see it evolving? And what about that as a theater of community for sharing? Sharing what?
Yeah, I actually think Shakespeare probably would be making games because he was very interested in the human heart. In the end, the online games are really about that. They're about the community. Whether they are online games that are played through a console and the community exists essentially in discussion forums outside of the game, or whether they're the kinds of games that I make where you're creating online worlds, they're still really about interacting with other people and discovering them and learning about them and having fun with them.
So when we sink our minds into Star Wars Galaxies, and of course we're at the console, but it's also it's hooked up to everybody else online, massively multiplayer, as the acronym has it. What's the human character that we're studying? Is it actual other human beings whose character we're coming to know through the way they play the game, or is it all through the intermediation of the narrative and technology, Raph?
It is actually other people. Online worlds, which is another way of referring to the MMORPG, that's a less clumsy way, they are essentially online stages. They're virtual reality. They're places that exist on the internet that people can connect to. This doesn't sound as outlandish as it used to, you know, 20, 30 years ago when they were first being created. The range of activities possible within these worlds is truly enormous. I've seen everything from, of course, there's combat, but I've seen bands going on tour. I have seen entire businesses with complex supply chains be created. And we've even seen the formation of, you know, less savory elements of society, such as mafias and extortion. So what you really do get, you know, depending on the scope of the game there, you really do get to see the full extent of humanity and the ways in which people interact with each other.
A kind of window on the world. But is it art, they might ask? Let's go to our listeners. Stephen's calling from Beverly, Massachusetts. Hi, Stephen. You're on the air.
Hey.
Hi.
The thing that caught my ear when I first heard you talking about it on the radio is whether Shakespeare would have done it. And
yeah.
I frankly don't think he would have produced anything nearly similar to what he actually did, because the medium is so different.
You mean he might have done it, but he couldn't have created Hamlet if it was a video game? Why not?
Yeah, well, the main part of Hamlet and why Hamlet is so Hamlet and Othello and mostly the tragedies are so compelling is that you cannot step in and beat Iago down for being a jerk or, you know, grab Hamlet, shake him, and say, what the heck are you doing? I mean, you are trapped watching the torture that someone else is going through.
You're trapped and you're tutored by William Shakespeare in that trap. Scott's calling from Richmond, Vermont. Hi, Scott. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I'm 46. My next-door neighbor's 50.
Okay.
We've been playing the older games, Team Fortress, Halo, Delta Force, things of that nature.
Big in their day.
Yes, exactly. What we've noticed, though, is that we got like 14-year-olds, 12-year-olds covering our back and looking after us and vice versa. And
I mean, these are kids you don't know who step into the multiplayer game and they're suddenly your allies.
Oh, yeah, and we look for each other and we're a team, and it makes me wonder how much of this is entertainment and how much of this is a longing for things like loyalty and, you know, camaraderie, creativity, and, you know, that sort of thing.
You certainly seem to find it, to feel it, even across decades of age difference right there.
Oh, yeah, we get, you know, ticked off at people who aren't playing right, and we go get them, and yeah.
Ref Koster, how about it? In Scott's case, he's not out bear hunting or out with the tribe on the trail of a mastodon, but he feels camaraderie with, in this case, young men, much younger, who are, watching his back in Halo.
Absolutely. I think that's actually one of the great things that the internet in general has given us, and in particular that online games give us. You know, one of the things that has kind of been lost with increased suburbanization and just population density, you don't tend to know your neighbors. It gets hard to find people who share your interests. You know, how many people know all of their neighbors or even do the same things that they do? And really what the caller has found is a community of interest where there's an activity that they can all take part in and get to know one another. And, you know, it's a really interesting dynamic, particularly with the age difference, because one of the really interesting things is that, certainly this has happened to me because I've gotten old enough, the kids are often more competent than the adults in navigating the space. But that doesn't mean that they're more competent in every way. And the adults still bring something really important to the table in terms of leadership and wisdom.
Wow. So popping people out of their little isolation pods and bringing back the agility of youth interacting with the wisdom of the mature gamer, Raph?
Yeah, you know, there's this stereotype that gaming is an antisocial activity. And over and over and over again, every survey has shown that it's just not the case.
Raph Koster, you spoke earlier about the convergence around social interaction, saying that has become very real. What about convergence beyond that, convergence with all kinds of human activity sort of driven through games? Do you see it coming?
Yes, I do. And while military convergence is, and even from the very day one of video games, I mean, the original inventor of video games, William Higginbotham, that was at Brookhaven National Lab.
So that was then. Where next, Raph Koster?
Well, I think the real interesting thing is where games start converging with entirely other areas. I mean, obviously, I'm very interested in the convergence with essentially socialization, since I make online games. But earlier I referenced Guitar Hero, games converging with music education. Games are really, they're converging in a lot of areas. And I think the thing that we tend to forget, because we look at the video game industry and say, well, it's only 30 years old and it requires all of this electronics and whatnot, is that, you know, games and play have been around a very, very long time. 100% of us are or have been gamers.
Right? One way or another, yes.
Mm-hmm. In one way or another. We all start out learning through games. The real question is why we drop it. Because really, we see it manifesting in all kinds of areas. We play games to become better managers. A lot of them are really bad games, but anybody who's worked in a corporation is familiar with those. We play games in order to, there's so many things we learn through games.
But then as a society, we tend to shape the games that we encourage to nurture certain kinds of behavior, morals, ideals. I mean, certainly many people look at baseball and you can read a whole philosophy into it. Raph, do you see video games shaping admirable molds for our minds?
I think you do. Now, I think I'm a huge advocate. I actually wrote a whole book about it. I'm a huge advocate of essentially taking authorial moral responsibility in the games that we make. Because as with any medium, you can write a despicable book that advocates horrible things. You can write one that advocates nobility and attempts to make the world a better place. I do believe that as game makers, we have the ability and the responsibility to make games that do that. Now, to my mind, something like SimCity has actually had a tremendous positive impact on the world. It's been used in city planning courses in colleges. It has spread a greater awareness of the difficulties of managing a city, of being a mayor, of how infrastructure works.
What's really involved? That's very true.
What's involved? And to me, that's a powerful bit of education to get out there.
I want to get some of our callers in. Our time's growing short. Jason is calling from Saranac Lake, New York. Hi, Jason. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thanks.
What's on your mind, Jason?
Well, I was a pretty hardcore, massively multiplayer game player for a while there. I was playing Final Fantasy.
And when you emerged, what had you learned?
The interesting thing is I took a female gender role and it was interesting to see how male characters and female characters treated me differently, whereas if I was a male...
Such as? Give us an example.
Well, the most memorable one would probably be how one of the girls in my in the shell that I was working with thought I was hitting on her boyfriend, and she pretty much like kicked me out of the group, and I got reinvited in.
So a catfight when she thought you were a female character moving on her guy.
Yeah, exactly, and pretty much everybody in our group liked me, and they're like, well, if you kick her out, we're gonna leave too, you know.
So did you learn something about empathy for the female?
Yeah, because I could see how some people treat females rather not in a nice fashion, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe that there's people out there that would say things to a girl like that.
And this time, the girl was you. Jason, that's an interesting glimpse. Thanks for your call. Our time is so short. Ref Koster, how about you? The century ahead, if it's shaped by the games of our children, what's the century going to look like?
You know, on dark days, I worry the models won't grow more sophisticated. That simplistic bad guy thinking that is in so many of the games will come true. But, you know, really, the trajectory isn't like that. The trajectory is towards greater complexity, more nuance, more subtlety. So, really, I'm not quite sure where it's going to land other than becoming the dominant entertainment form of the next century. I do firmly believe in that. I just want to be involved in getting it there.
Ref Koster, Chief Creative Officer for Sony Online Entertainment, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.